I took the advice of my wife. She said I need to preach on Mother's Day. And I was like, well, I'm not a mother. How can I do that? You know, anyway. But I was giving a hard time. But she said it again. I thought about it. And I said, okay. I said, I'll do that. So title to me, Lessons of Faith for My Mother. Okay, Lessons of Faith for My Mother. And you know, I'm going to look at that. So this will be topical. You know, I enjoy going through verse by verse. But we won't do that today. My mother, though, are inspiration. They're role models. They wear many hats. They're nurses, cooks, storytellers, cuddle buddies, friend, mentor, counselor. They're strong. They're usually the first to be there and the last to leave. They're smart. They're teachers. They're problem solvers. Mothers teach us. Our mothers teach their children many life lessons alone. The same truth with my mom. My mom taught me many lessons as well. And as I was reflecting on this, I was thinking, you know, about that and the direction. And I thought about what my mother has taught me. And she taught me many things. But one of the things that probably is a little different is that my mom taught me to communicate. When I was born, when I was born, obviously I had some different, I was not the same as everyone else, and for whatever reasons, early on the doctors told my mother very quickly that I would never talk. And so I couldn't hear and I couldn't talk, so instead of learning to talk, I learned sign language. And obviously, my mom, a stay-at-home mom, and my dad worked, so she was the one that was primarily responsible for that, and she was self-taught, and she still got the book, one called The Joys of Signing, and she started teaching me how to do sign language. Then later, well, my mom never really wanted to listen to people, so she must not listen to the doctors. I don't know exactly, but I first got a hearing aid, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But with a hearing aid, being able to hear, I started talking, and you know, great people are not great because of who they are a lot of time. They're great by who they surround themselves with. And people who know, hey, I need help. And my mom was no different. We lived an hour from Tuscaloosa, so we took many trips to the University of Alabama. I don't know how many. All the time. I remember this lady, Melissa, would come over to the house. I can't remember what she done. All I can remember is she cooked brownies one time. But that was not what she came to do. So anyway, I remember that. But obviously it was something to do with talking and countless hours, speech classes. She wasn't one of them mothers that just dropped me off. She was right there, hands-on, through the whole journey. I literally wouldn't be a preacher if it wasn't my mother's going the extra mile. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't my mother going the extra mile in my education. She taught me how to succeed. The doctor said again, I don't know how they knew this one. And I would never make it in public school, that I would need to be in a special setting. And one reason, we live in the country, so there's no extra programs around, you know. My mother's present. Every year she would go to the teachers, and although this should have been common sense, would explain to them, take up my hearing test, explain to them I couldn't hear, and required that I would sit in the front seat in the class. And until about 7th or 8th grade, until I begged my mom to quit going up there, she said, that's fine, as long as your grades don't slip. My mom never gave up. She could have taken the easy or the lazy way. She could have been the parent that said, you know, I've done all, I don't have to go the extra mile. But she did. She provided a way for me to hear. She never got complacent. Another chapter, which really came before all of that, was hearing aids. Many trips. I obviously didn't like wearing them. I don't know how old I was. I'd wear them for 1 hour a day. And then she would take them out. And continue that. She never quit. She had a goal. I remember even when I jumped in the pool and ruined my hearing aid, she never got mad. We had gotten a car, drove that hour to Tuscaloosa. We did a lot of waiting in the waiting rooms. She taught me how to succeed. She taught me 7 times 3. I don't know if I've told this story. But I was doing flashcards. And for some reason, I could not get 7 times 3. And I think it was a Saturday, when I was at home, she took and pinned 7 times 3 flashcard to my shirt. I had to wear it. If I can find them flashcards, there's a pin needle in it. And so, I still know that 7 times 3 is 22. She never let my hearing challenge be a crutch or an excuse. She, along with my dad, taught me to follow God. She was saved at the age of 18 at a revival. She taught me to follow God because of her salvation, but also because of her steadfastness. She was consistent. And I'm going to tell you something, parent. Consistency matters so much. If you're one day on fire for God and the next day can't be found, that is going to destroy your kids spiritually. Consistency. It ain't about only being, having not even a high standard, but about being consistent about what you believe. She was not perfect, but we didn't have to wonder if we were going to go to church. Many times I'll see her reading her Bible. Her salvation, what made me follow God, her steadfastness, her sincerity. She was honest. She was the same mother at church as she was at home. Her standards didn't change when the crowd changed. She wasn't a hypocrite. Perfect? No. But she wasn't a hypocrite. Her salvation, her steadfastness, her sincerity, but her standards. We didn't watch what everyone else watched on TV. We didn't go where everybody went to go. And I'm going to talk about it in the last point. We also didn't hang out with family just because they were family. If they wasn't the right type of people for me to be around. She was a godly mother who taught me to follow God. Godly mothers are important and needed. Godly mothers can and will make an impact on their children's spiritual well-being. My mother, along with my father, did just that. And so did Timothy's mother. In 2 Timothy 1:5, I'm always skipping around, but in 10 tone now, that's not going to be my main text, but 2 Timothy 1:5 says, "And when I call to remember the unfriend's faith, and indeed went first to dwell with your grandmother, Lois, and her mother, and I am persuaded that indeed also." If you start studying this passage, you'll start realizing that Timothy faith and his faithfulness to God seemed to have been a result from his mother. His father was a Greek, and from reading, most likely, I think it was Warren Winfrey said that the implication seemed to be that Timothy's father had not yet become a Christian. And as far as we know, he never did. Timothy's mother's faith influenced Timothy to have faith in Jesus and to live for God. But not only Timothy's mother, but also Timothy's grandmother. Two mothers having faith and living by faith had a major impact on a daughter and then a son. Wow. They're mothers of faith. Now, when you start studying them, you'll realize there's really not much there. It is the only time that these two ladies appear in the New Testament. Yet, they were mothers of faith that taught their children an important lesson. Follow God. I asked Elizabeth, since she's the one that told me how to preach on Mother's Day, I gave her a question. I said, "What is the most important quality in a mother?" And she said, thought about it, said, "Godliness." And I said, "Right." And godly mothers are mothers of faith. We don't know much about Timothy, mother or grandmother, but there are some mothers of faith that we can look at to see how we, or what lessons we can learn from them. This morning, we're going to look at three mothers and see how they live and the lessons that we can learn from that. The first two can be found in Hebrews chapter 11, which is Moses' mother, Jochebed, Isaac's mother, Sarah, and Samuel's mother, Hannah. Obviously today, just because you're not a mother, these are three lessons for anyone, but they do come from three mothers. The first lesson that we can learn about faith is number one. I'm not having the slides, but it's very simple. And number one, you can write this down. Faith over fear. Faith over fear. Letter A, and I wasn't letting you do it, to outline the reality of fear. We've talked about this before, and that fear is present. At least 60% of adults admit to at least having one unreasonable fear. Many people fear and struggle with fear each and every day. And by the way, being a Christian doesn't make you immune to that. I could probably ask you now, I'm not going to, but I can say, do you have a fear? And raise your hand, and probably all across this room, that we have hands up. But we can look at the Bible. We know Abraham, Genesis chapter 12. We know that he was going to Egypt, and he said, you know, he looked at Sarah, and he said, behold, I know thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is my wife, and they will kill me. But they will save me alive. You know, he should have just quit talking, right? Right after saying you're pretty, right, Brother Mark? But what happened, he does like I do, he kept talking. And he said, hey, you're good looking. And I'm not the only one that thinks that. All of these guys are going to think it too. And we know what happened. Well, he says, surely, the fear, surely, because they're going to kill me, I'm going to tell them that you're my sister. Elijah, 1 Kings chapter 19, we preached on him before. And it said, and Jezebel sent a message to Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me. Moreover, also, if make not thy life as the life of the one of them by tomorrow. And he saw that he arose and went for his life. What happened, and Jezebel basically said, I am going to kill you. And so what did he do? He ran. We looked into that, how that wasn't to be what he was to do. Gideon, Judges chapter 7, you know, he's supposed to do the great things for God, and God said, but if thou fear to go down, he said, go with Perah, thy servant, down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say. And what's interesting, it says this, then he went down. He was scared. Gideon, no doubt, had fear. The disciples in Matthew chapter 8, and he said, why are you fearful, O ye of little faith? See, fear is present today, but fear is also problematic. One writer said this, that fear is a faith killer. And isn't it difficult to understand how fear could be a faith killer? Those who have fear will naturally focus on themselves and the problem and not on God. In other words, when fear becomes the driving force in your life, fear becomes the deciding factor and not God's word. We see that in Abraham. Abraham fears for his life, so what did he do? He lied. And he also didn't love his wife. Which is what we're going to talk about next week in Ephesians. Husband loving your wife. Elijah, what did he do? He ran. He moved without God telling him to. Fear, he had become a master. And we all know Jesus said this, you can only serve one master. Since this is a Mother's Day sermon, mom and dad, let me ask you this. Does fear guide your choices for your children and for your family? Does fear of them not being popular? Does fear of them missing out on what everybody's doing? Is fear of them not being liked? The fear of them not liking you? The fear of them not being successful? The fear of them not having friends? The fear of them not fitting in? Does that keep you from making godly choices? In America, we live in a very status and success-driven world. And I'm afraid it's crept into our parenting. We want our kids to be successful. We want them to have status. We want our daughters to be the prettiest little thing walking around. And we want all the boys to chase after them. Why? I don't know, but I don't get that. We want the boy to be a ladies' man. We want them to be the captain of the ball team. We want them to be a straight-A student. We want them all these things, success and study, and got a lot of parents caught up in that. I mean, here's the thing. What spirituality? Spirituality. See, I'm afraid we're so scared that they're not going to be what like everybody else, that our parenting is not what it needs to be. Letter B, if we had, sorry, I keep saying that, but letter B would be the remedy of fear. We see the reality of fear is everywhere, but now we see the remedy of fear. The remedy of fear is this, already, faith. Faith. Proverbs 29:25 says, the fear of man bringeth a snare, but whosoever putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. See, fear right now, and it may be fear of not having enough money. You know, before you take a job, parents, you need to ask yourself, is this going to affect my family spiritually? Am I going to have to work every Sunday? I mean, I know of a couple now who's got a small child, and they moved, and the dad took a different job and didn't do what he told me. Well, I'll say it, the couple that used to come here, Cam and Miranda. You know why he moved? He said, I can't get in church like I want to be. I'm not involved in church, and he likes to sing. He said, I can't play my musical instrument. I can't be faithful. And even he couldn't be faithful. He would tell me that. He wanted to be involved. And he said, I can't be with my family like I need to be, and I need to lead them spiritually. And much as I hated it, they moved because they were coming to church here, and I really wanted to stay. I texted him and said, you're making the right decision. You're making the right decision. See, we fear. Oh, we may not be able to get this or that. But I'm telling you, the most important thing is living by faith. And by the way, the remedy to living by fear is a choice. Now, it's a choice to live by faith. It's a choice to say, and for me and my house, we will serve the Lord by faith. And say, I am going to live according to the word of God because I trust it. If you want to, you can turn to Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2. We see here a godly mother did just that. In Exodus chapter 2, we know this story. If you haven't been in church very long, as a kid especially, you've learned this story. And it said that there went a man of the house of Levi and took a wife and a daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bush rustle and dabbed it with slime and pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flag by the river bank. And by the way, you think, that's a terrible story. By the way, it's not really about the son, but her doctor's sister was watching. She knew something for her. She knew God was going to take care of Moses. I mean, so what's the point here? The point is in that we know, we see here that Moses was born. But what I didn't read was the decree from the king. In verse 16, you'll see that basically because they're getting so big and so populated, and that the Pharaoh said, hey, when the kids are born, and it's a boy, kill it. And if it's a girl, let it live. And I was sitting there looking at it, I told Willow, I said, you've been safe, Willow. But that was a decree. And no, here's the dilemma. Oh, I'm afraid the average Christian today, if they've been in this situation, David is worried. David, I don't know what to do. There was a dilemma. But here's the decision. And it says here, it says she hid him 3 months. You know what she decided? She decided, she said, I'm not going to kill my son. And by the way, they live in a pretty ruthless time. I mean, the fact that the Pharaoh decreed that, you complain about a president now. Think about then you had a president who said, if you have a baby boy, you have to kill him. That's a pretty bad situation. That would be fearful. But she said, I'm not going to kill my son. She decided not to follow fear, but faith. You say, how do you know that? Hebrews 11, verse 23. Said, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now, I wrote this down when I was looking over my note this morning. I don't know if it's necessarily a true statement. I put fear and faith cannot coexist, but in the adding to some degree. I mean, we can all be fearful at times. We can't follow the one, but it's almost a point to where if fear is in the picture, it's going to be really hard to do what's right. Hey, Moses' mother teaches us a valuable lesson. Live by faith, not by fear. It doesn't apply just to mothers or to parents, but to all of us. If fear controls you, you're not going to serve God faithfully. And the day our fear is not, oh, somebody's thinking to kill me, I'm going to tell you, we're fearful that we're not going to have the nicest car, or we're not going to have the biggest house, or our kids are not going to be able to do this and that. That's what we're scared of. Well, I'm telling you, we are fearful that we're not going to have status and that we're not going to have success. And we're afraid our kids are not going to either. And you live fearful of them things. And you're fearful that I won't, I know, I mean, now I have a child, yeah, you want to do things for them, and you wonder, but it's okay for them not to get everything they want. And by the way, you better not work your life away and not spend time with the kids and bring them to church. Moses' mother teaches us a lesson, faith over fear. The next mother teaches us this, number two, faith over failure. So if you're taking notes, faith over failure. We all make mistakes. Mistakes can be costly. But mistakes doesn't mean you can't change. Letter A here, if you're taking notes, you want to outline Sarah's mistake. Genesis chapter 16. Hearing her mistakes, plural. Mistakes. I wrote this down. She was scandalous. I mean, Hollywood today can make a movie about this. You say, what's the movie about? It's about a woman who looked at her husband and said, hey, go sleep with another woman. See, we don't say it like that to me, Brother Darrell. That's what this woman did. This is what this mother did. She was scandalous. She said, hey, Abraham, I can't have a child. So what I want you to do, and I want you to take Hagar, and I want you to sleep with her and have a child. How crazy that is. And it says in chapter 16, verse 1, now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarah said to Abraham, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go into my handmaid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. I don't even understand that logic, Brother Mark. I don't understand that logic. That's not your child. Like, I don't even understand that logic. I mean, that part of the problem, you're not following God, and you're fearful. She was fearful that she wasn't going to have a child. See? See how crazy that is? She was scandalous. There's no doubt about that. It was a crazy, wicked plan that she had. Not only was she scandalous, but she was skeptical. Go to chapter 18, verse 10. And it said, and he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. After Sarah heard it in the tent door, it was behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age. And ceased to be when Sarah, after the manner of women. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, surely, of surety bear a child which am old, and anything too hard for the Lord. You know what? She was skeptical. I say, Sarah made some mistakes. Not only was she scandalous, now she's skeptical, and by the way, she literally laughed in God's face. She literally laughed in God's face. She was scandalous. She was skeptical. She was selfish. Now, this is after Isaac had been born, but I want to show you the type of woman that she was, and the struggle she had, and the mistake she made. We know that Isaac is now born. Chapter 21, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which, by the way, she said that was going to be her son, right? She said, that's going to be my son, not now, right? Not her son now. You know, when she had borne to Abraham mocking, wherefore she said to Abraham, cast this bondwoman and her son in. Now, okay, maybe the woman. Maybe. But the son? I mean, this woman's pretty selfish. She's pretty selfish. She's pretty selfish. Hey, maybe that's where you're at. She made some mistake. Maybe today you're a mother, or maybe you're a father, maybe you're a child. No matter what you are, you may have made some mistakes. Here's the problem, though. A lot of people who make mistakes start believing this. I can't do anything about it. It's not true. We see here little B, and we see Sarah's mistake. Now look at Sarah's message. If Sarah could talk to us today about her mistakes, her doubt, she definitely would say, hey, it was wrong, okay? It is wrong. But this is what she would say. Get back up. She would say, get back up. Okay, maybe you've not been following, maybe you've not been guiding your family the way you should. Maybe you've not been the husband you should have been. Maybe you've not been the wife you should have been. Maybe today you've not been the mother you need to be. Maybe you're not doing things like you should. Maybe you've made some mistakes. But here's the thing. She would say, get back up. Too many people make a mistake and then just seem just to say, stay there. She would say this. It's never too late. She would say, it's never too late to live by faith and not your failures. Don't believe the lie that you can't change. Don't believe the lie that God won't forgive you. Because Sarah had made a mistake. But if you look in Hebrews 11, verse 11, and really start thinking about what Sarah was, kind of like Samson, it blows my mind that he's in this chapter. But it says in Hebrews 11, 11, through faith, also Sarah herself received strength to receive a seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithfully who had promised. Somewhere along the line, she got things right. Somewhere along the line, she did have it. You know, somewhere along the line, she wasn't skeptical. And because of that, the Bible said, because of her faith, she was able to have a child. She made some mistakes. But she had faith. Now, probably not much, but I'm so glad it says it's the faith of a mustard seed. Now, your faith doesn't excuse your sin. Okay, I want you to understand that. Your sin need to be dealt with. But it does, your faith does give you hope to move forward and to serve God. Philippians 3:13-14, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but there's one thing, forgetting the things which are behind and reaching forth to the things which are before, I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. You know, two things, a lot of times we don't move forward because we get complacent with our success. You know what I mean? You know, successful. You know, you say, well, I've done all these things. I've done great. So I'm going to take it easy. No, you got to put them things behind you. Nick Saban said that about his players. He told the Alabama player, just because you put on an Alabama jersey doesn't mean you're going to automatically win. But what he's saying is, what you did last week, what you did the week before, what you did last year doesn't matter. You got to put that behind you. But here's the same thing true in what you do wrong. And what you do wrong. Maybe you did lose the game. Maybe you didn't do what you should have done. You got to put that behind you. And I'm not excusing sin, but you have got to put that behind you. I think some people are like, they don't do what they should. And they say, well, I can't do no better. You can do better. You can do better. You're just choosing not to. You're not choosing to put your failures behind you. You're using your failure as an excuse. And you need to stop doing that. See, there is Mother's Day because for parents, because your kids' spiritual health depends on it. Failure has to be dealt with, but what is dealt with, move forward in faith. Sarah, the mother that teaches us that we can move forward even when we make mistakes. Lesson for my mother. Number one, faith over fear. Number two, faith over failure. And then number three, it don't get you. Faith over family. So, what? What? There are many children who have a weak spiritual foundation because parents place their children before God. the worst thing you can do as a parent, the first thing I can do for a parent, for Willow, is to love her more than I love God. I'm going to say that again because it's true. The worst thing I can do for her spiritually, maybe not for her success, and maybe not for her status. Oh, yeah, for status in America, the best thing I can do is love her more than God. But for her spiritually speaking, and everything else, really, is to love God more than her. By the way, I say this, right? You interpret the Bible in light of the Bible, right? Let me read a verse for you that proves I'm right. Luke 14, 26. And there went great multitude with him, just Jesus. And he turned and said to them, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sister, yea, his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. What is he saying? He's not saying hate your family. He's saying that your love for God should be so great that your love for your family looks like hate. And by the way, we'll take this a step further. I am not going to be the husband I need to be if I love my wife more than God. My wife is not going to be the wife she needs to be if she loves me more than God. Because you know the old triangle? Here's me, here's my wife, and here's God. The closer me and her grow closer to God, the closer we become. The closer you love God and teach your kids to love God, the closer you're going to get as a family. So, by the way, so the worst thing is to put your child, your spouse, even your mom or dad in a place where only God belongs. It's true. I'm afraid that a lot of parents, they are following after the desires of their children and not desires of God. Well, I mean, why do so many kids now who are church kids play baseball on Sundays? They care more about baseball. They care more about that than do God. We see a mother who did just what I'm talking about. She placed her faith over her family in 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1. You know who I'm going to talk about. Hannah. Hannah's problem, that's letter A if you're taking notes, her problem is in verse 2, and this man, he had two wives, and the name was Hannah, but Hannah had no children. I skipped the other woman's name because, to be honest, I don't know how to pronounce it, Ms. Kim. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not going to try. I practice some things, and then I forget how to say them, so I'm not going to say. But he had two wives, but Hannah had no children. Verse 5, but unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion. And he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb, and her adversary also provoked her sore to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. Then going down, it says, and then her husband said to her, Hannah, why thou weepest, and why eatest thou not, and why thou heart grieves? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? No. I can tell you that, no. He's a husband, not a son. But we see that he did love her. But that was her problem. And letter B here is Hannah's promise. In verse 11, we know the story of how she's praying and Eli can't hear anything and she thinks she's drunk. And it said in verse 11, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look upon the affliction of thy handmaid and remember me and not forget thy handmaid, but will give unto thy handmaid a man child, then I will give unto him unto the Lord all the days of his life. And there shall no razor come upon his head. She promised to give him to the Lord. And obviously, when you read the rest of the story, she meant literally. She meant literally. So we see here Hannah's problem, Hannah's promise, and then we see Hannah's plan. God answered her prayer. Hannah had a plan. Now, I know you're thinking, you're like me, is this a plan to get out of her promise? Because that's what I would do, right? No, listen. Her plan and to make good on her promise. Look at verse 22. And it's time to go back up to see Eli. But Hannah went not up, for she said to her husband, I will not go to him until the child be weaned, and then I'll bring him that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. Now, I don't know if it was Warren Williams or Robert Piccirilli. I don't remember. One of them, I think one of them said this, is that her husband, the fun fact, her husband, from what I remember, he's not in my notes, but is that her husband could have had the legal right to say, you're not going to follow that vow. Basically, he could have got her off the hook, according to the law. But he didn't. I mean, it showed how godly he was, too. But here's what I was thinking. I read that and I said, when do they usually wean children? What age? 10? 14? 20? 30? One women and mothers usually wean their children at the age of 3. 3. Amazing. I don't know how she did that. She placed faith over her family. And we can't even come to church when family shows up. We can't come to church. I've never understood where one kid's sick, nobody shows up. When I was a kid, when I got sick, mom and dad stayed with me, and the rest of the family went to church. I don't understand that. We can't even tell our kids, no, you can't watch that. Well, they want to be able to, oh no, we can't let them be left out of the group. No, the problem is that many people love family more than God. It sounds good, but it's not biblical. You should love God more than anything. Many parents love their kids more than God. The reason some families are not what they need to be is because mom and dad have put their kids where God should be. Many parents hinder their kids spiritually because they won't give them to God. I mean, I went to Bible college, so I know, like, you know, there were other kids in the youth group and stuff that wanted to go, and mom and dad didn't want them to go. They're too far from home. Won't them to live next door. Now, it's not because they didn't go to Bible college, but some of them people are not living for God now. You know why? Not because they didn't go to Bible college, because they didn't put God first in their family. They put family first. And when you put family first, you may look around one day and have your family around you, but your family may not be serving God, and you probably won't be either. Anything in an improper place is bad. I know families who wouldn't let their kids hang out with an unsaved kid, but they'll let them hang out with unsaved cousins. Why? Because of family. And I've seen this when I used to work in North Carolina, when I saw kids who and I'm not the wisest person or the most observant, but I'm pretty sure the reason they're not, they fell spiritually when I became a teenager and a 20-year-old, and because mom and dad let them hang out with unsaved family members. Just because they're family doesn't mean that they should be hanging. There's going to be a bad influence on them. The best thing you can ever do for your family is keep God at the top and love God more than anything. And it sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. I guarantee you, if you love anything more than God, whether it be your family or work or pleasures, I guarantee you, your family is not going to turn out the way they need to. Not going to. I'm going to tell you. They're going to become, because they're not going to follow God, and you aren't responsible for that. Too many families have destroyed their family by making their family the idol. Your kids don't belong at the top. God does. By the way, your kids don't belong to you. They belong to God. They belong to God. See, I don't think I put it in my notes. I think I was going to, but I'm afraid a lot of parents, they want their kids to go to heaven. That's about as far as they want. They don't really want their kids to sell out for Jesus. I'm afraid that's where we're at now. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to sell out. Hey, hear what I'm saying? It's time to sell out. Hannah teaches us that we need to have faith over family. These three mothers are great teachers. They teach us three things. Faith over fear, faith over failure, and faith over family. And Miss Tammy, Miss Brenda come to play. I know this is not a typical Mother's Day sermon. About as good as you're going to get probably from me. But I don't think I was qualified to tell you how to be a mother, you know, because I'm not a mother. So I didn't want to go that direction either. So anyway, but these are true statements. And by the way, you don't have to be the mother to be on the altar. I pray today that people go to the altar. Not because I think you're a bad person, but because these are three things that we need to make sure. I'm going to tell you, number one, just in general, if we're leaving, I heard Rob Morgan preach yesterday at the association meeting. And he painted a picture of all the leaders and what's going on. He went to Psalms 2 and talked about how the world, even your neighbors will not say, they're rebelling against God. They're rebelling against God, and that's not going to change. And in the gloomy outlook, here's the problem, is that many of us, even Christians, are being controlled by fear instead of faith. You know how I can test that? If you're grumpy. If you're ill. You're mad at the world. Why? Because you're living by fear. You're scared every day, and you usually get scared when he went and talked about China and Iran and Russia and all. Yeah, it's scary. And we get fearful and we live that way. Hey, no, we're supposed to live by faith. We sang living by faith and trusting in Him. But I'm afraid we don't do that. It may be what it is for you. Maybe today you're living by fear. Here's the thing. You can't do both. If they begin to play, maybe you have made a mistake. Maybe you have to. Let's stand on our feet with our heads bowed, eyes closed for a minute. Maybe you have made some mistakes. Maybe you made some bad mistakes. When it's time to deal with them, it's time to get out of the pig slop like the prodigal son did. The prodigal son woke up and said, I'm in a pig slop. He repented and said, I'm going back home. Maybe that's what you need to do. Maybe you need to come to the altar and maybe you need to put some things behind you. Hey, maybe you have made an idol out of your family. Hey, I can understand. Down 2.5 months old. Love her dearly. It's easy, but we never need to put anything before God. And if they play, if God spoke to you, I want to encourage you to come to the altar today.